from the Rebel baseball team. That'll be a good time, and you'll get to hear the keynote address from Greg Maddux, 2014 Hall of Famer, current UNLV baseball volunteer coach, 23 years in the major leagues. And Greg Maddux is going to join us in here just a second.
He will also serve you chicken wings at that event.
I don't know if that's true.
No?
I don't think so.
I think I might have thrown that in there.
I don't think so.
Wishful thinking?
Yeah, I think probably you are always thinking about chicken wings.
That's true.
It's probably the case.
That's a good point.
So, not sure about that, but yes, Greg Maddux is actually on the phone with us. So, we won't delay. We won't we'll make him sit through a break. We'll just go right to him because Greg Maddux is on the phone. And, Greg, we were just talking about this great event coming up, but thanks for joining us, man.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So, tell people about it. We talked about it. The first pitch dinner coming up Thursday night, and you'll be giving, you know, the keynote address. It's a great way for people to come out and meet the team and learn all about the team that's going to be on the field this year. And you'll be delivering a speech, which I'm sure people are very excited to hear about, but it should be a very cool event coming up on Thursday night.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think I'm going to do a Q&A. I'll just answer questions from the audience, but, you know, the players are going to get introduced, the coaches, and, you know, just want to thank the people in advance for helping support the team.
There you go. So definitely get on out there. It is at the Strip View Pavilion Thursday night. Starts at 5:30 with reception, dinner to follow, and the great Q&A coming up with Greg Maddux. Well, kind of tell people about your role with this team because you've been around the program for a little bit now, and what do you do with them?
Well, I am the volunteer coach, so I work half as much as the other coaches, but I do work with the pitchers and kind of joke around with the everyday players a little bit, you know, try to keep it fun, make it, you know, baseball's meant to be played and have fun playing it. So I try to make it as fun as possible for the kids and at the same time try to help them coach themselves and, you know, just try to make the players better, pass down what I know, and hopefully some of it sticks.
Why was this interesting to you? Because, I mean, obviously with your accomplishments and your reputation, everything else around the baseball world, you could have pretty much done anything you wanted in baseball. And, you know, this is what you decided. We know it's your, you know, it's your hometown. You love to be here. But what was it about this that was interesting for you?
Well, honestly, the travel was appealed to me. You know, I love baseball. And, you know, whether it's college or, you know, A-ball, AAA, or even in the big leagues, it's the same game. You know, I think... you know, the only difference is, you know, when you watch on TV, the game's just a little faster, you know. But I think, you know, the players, they play the game the same way. You think the same way, react the same way. And I enjoy being retired. And, you know, it's my hometown. I live here. We only play 50 games a year. There's limitations on practice. So, you know, you can't be out there all day. The kids got to go to class.
Yeah.
So just time-wise, it allows me to stay in the game of baseball, and I enjoy being around the kids and the coaches, and, you know, I love the game. I love being around it.
We were joking about this earlier, but how difficult is it really for somebody that has accomplished as much as you and was so good as you to just be like, why don't you just hit the spot every time? Hit the corner every time, guys.
Well, it's easier said than done. I mean, I think everybody knows that. And, you know, you do what you can to try to help their command. You know, a lot of it, it's kind of like throwing hard. Some guys have good control and some don't. You can do things to help it a little bit. So, you know, I focus on that. I focus a lot on teaching the kids how to call their own game. I think it's important that they think as pitchers and not just react like robots. And, you know, I don't want to call the pitches. I want them to call their own pitches and trust what they see on the field and basically throw what they want to throw. You know, I think... it's a lot easier to throw a pitch you want to throw than a pitch you're told to throw. So, you know, I try to help them with their pitch selection, their mechanics, and, you know, and it's pretty cool because, you know, after a few weeks or a month, you start to see them starting to coach themselves better, and, you know, that's a pretty good reward for a coach.
Greg, and we're here with Greg Maddux, Major League Baseball Hall of Famer. First ballot, I might add, Greg... obviously, pitching's changed from a couple standpoints in terms of obviously the money and the attention. But what about the art of pitching? How has it changed from obviously the late '80s when you came in and the early '90s when you were obviously so dominant to what we're seeing today and these kids you're dealing with?
Well, I think you know the biggest difference is you know when I was playing, it was throw strikes. You know, a challenge hitters in the strike zone. You have to get hitters out in the strike zone. And I think the game's changed now where the pitchers, do a lot better job than we did of getting the hitters out of the strike zone. You know, I think they pitch out of the strike zone a lot better than we did. And I think a lot of that is, you know, they throw harder. You know, they got better stuff. If we threw 90 back in the day, that was hard. Now you got to throw 95. And you know, because of the arm speed, the curveballs are better, the sliders are better. I mean, John Smoltz had one of the best sliders in baseball for 15 years, and you turn the TV on now and you see, like, there's 10 guys on the field that can throw that slider now. So, you know, the pitchers are just better now. They're faster, and they're able to pitch out of the strike zone a lot easier than we could.
You brought up a slider. I think of Chris Sale's slider as the dominant slider in baseball today.
Yeah, cool. Good one.
Yeah, absolutely. So my question to you would be is, what, maybe not that pitch, but what one pitch today when you look at, I don't know who it may be, maybe it is Sale, but when you look at the ace pitchers today, whose pitch, if you were a batter, or maybe as a former, you know, pitcher and Hall of Famer yourself, do you admire most?
Well, you know, I think, You know, Verlander's up there, Greinke, mm-hmm. Kershaw, all those guys. You know, I think, you know, as far as being able to throw every pitch, you know, better than average, I think you got to go with Verlander. I think, you know, he's got four pitches that are all, you know, plus-plus. And, you know, but I like the way, like, Greinke thinks and competes, and he's a complete player. You know, he fields, he hits, he runs the bases, he does all those things. And, you know, I enjoy watching the game, and, you know, I kind of lean towards the old guys that, you know, were just coming up when I was coming out, you know, because I got to see them young in their careers, and, you know, I just enjoy watching it.
And those are guys that are still of that mindset of, hey, you're taking the mound to start, you're trying to give your team seven or eight, hopefully even nine innings in a game, but pitching has changed so much. What have you seen, and what are your thoughts on the fact that teams are doing this? Hey, give me a closer to go the first two innings, or, you know, give me a starter that goes three innings. What have you thought of that progression?
Well, you know what? It works. Whether you like it or not, you know, you watch what the Brewers did, and it worked, you know. I mean, they were winning games, and, you know, it's kind of changed a little bit now where, you know, we sometimes would attack a hitter's weakness so we would have a chance to get him out, you know, the third or fourth at bat of the game. Or we would have pitched to their strength so we had a chance to get him out the third or fourth time in the game. And now you really don't see that. Now you just see the starting pitcher. He just, you know, buries the hitter's weakness, and, you know, because he knows he's not going to face him the third and fourth time. So, you know, that's probably the biggest difference is I think, you know, they're not in at bat down the road. They're just trying to get him out on the next pitch. And I think, you know, that's kind of what we did, and I don't really see that being done today.
Well, speaking of not being done today, Greg, I just wanted to real quick get your thoughts on Shohei Ohtani. Obviously, last year he was the talk of the season. He dealt with some injuries. This year's going to be his second year in the league. Do you think this guy can be successful trying to do what really no one's done since Babe Ruth? Can this happen?
Well, I'm looking forward to finding out. You know, obviously, I have no idea, but I'm going to watch and see. And he's easy to root for. It's a good story, and you know, you just kind of wish him the best, and let's hope it works out for everybody.
Yeah, you were talking about fun here when you were talking about working with the Rebels over there at UNLV, trying to keep the game fun for them. Greg, how did you keep the game fun? Because you said you like to have fun. I know you as Mad Dog. I was a Cubs fan. Like, so the idea that you were actually having fun when you were out there being so serious, how did you keep it fun? And were you actually having fun, or is that just revisionist history?
Well, there's a time for fun. And, you know, the time for fun's between innings, days you're not pitching.
There you go.
You know, there's a lot of downtime in baseball. You know, you're at the park for a long time every day, but you're not really doing a whole lot. And, you know, when you're not doing a whole lot, that's when it's time to have fun and joke around and enjoy your teammates. And, you know, when it's time to play, it's time to play. You know, you got to know when to hit the switch and, you know, try to be at your best. And, you know, the other 23 hours a day, you're having fun.
All right, best prank ever pulled on you or best prank you ever pulled off?
Oh, well, you know.
I like the pause.
A lot of them you can't really talk about. Yeah. You know, the parents will get mad. But, you know, the Chris Bryant thing was probably the most recent. That was a lot of fun. You know, I had fun doing that. And, you know, he was a good sport about it. And, you know, I think we became kind of decent friends after that.
Look at that.
He's a good dude.
Bonding.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you can hear. Maybe go ask Greg during his Q&A session.
Yeah, ask him better questions than we did.
Yeah, the first pitch dinner coming up, Strip View Pavilion, Thursday night, 5:30 reception, dinner to follow. Greg Maddux will be out there, and just a great job. Hey, just tell us a little bit about what you expect from the team this year.
Well, you know what? We lost like seven guys got drafted last year, but I think we replaced them with some pretty good players. You know, I think we've got one of the best shortstops in the league, and I think the pitching's going to be halfway decent. And, you know, it's just a matter of once the games start next week, you know, how we compete. You know, I think that's always a question with the young players is are they going to be able to, you know, to play like they practice. We've been practicing great, and now it's just a matter of taking it into the game. You know, I expect good things from our team this year, to be honest with you. I like our team a lot, and you know, we'll just see when the lights come on how we play.
Well, it's certainly a fun night out. I highly recommend everybody getting out there. And, Greg, last thing before we get you out of here, I said that already, but I'll do it again. we heard, you know, another season of Hall of Fame, and you were certainly our Hall of Famer, no question about it. We enjoyed watching you get in. But, you know, there is a lot of controversy out there about guys that aren't getting in. You know, you are a member of the Hall of Fame. So what are your thoughts on certain guys just being excluded based on, you know, the thoughts of the media of what they may or may not have done during their career?
Well, you know, that's the rules. You know, the media votes. Every other year there's a board that votes in case the media didn't get it right.
Yeah.
And I think you see Harold Baines and Lee Smith got in this year on that. And, there's a system in place to try to protect against that. And every other year I think it shows up. And, you know, I think Lee Smith definitely deserved to be in the Hall of Fame, and he got in. And looking forward to meeting Harold Baines next summer too as well.
There you go. Well, you can meet Greg Maddux and the rest of the baseball team out there. First pitch dinner Thursday night, Strip View Pavilion, 5:30 with reception, dinner after in the Q&A from the great Greg Maddux. Man, we really, really appreciate
and
the time
bring
today.
Bring your checkbooks too, because there's going to be a silent auction.
Oh boy, there you go. Definitely.
The kids need baseballs to play with, you know what I mean?
that's for sure. Get on out there.
Right.
We'll see you out there Thursday night. Thanks, man.
All right, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
Greg Maddux, decent pitcher.
He's
pretty
okay.
Decent pitcher.
He's okay.
Time.
He had, he didn't have the best stuff, but he had some okay control.
he had good enough. And early in his career, his stuff was even better.
I was actually kidding. No, his stuff was fine. Like, obviously, the rub on Maddux was he was this master of control and psychology. But, I mean, 92, 93, like, he could locate it and he could also give you problems. One thing we didn't talk to him about, which I guess we can always talk to him about the next time he comes on, you know, in the coming months or years, but spin rate in baseball. Because that wasn't something that was talked about, you know, when he was pitching, but now it's kind of, at least Houston's brought it to the forefront and other organizations, seems to be all the rage. I'd like to hear his thoughts on that down the road.
I'm sure he's a guy who's kind of old school, but I think he's seemed to be very receptive to some new thinking and new thoughts.
Yep.
So not you know, he was even on board with the, hey, start a guy for three innings, and it's just a different philosophy.
Which, I got to tell you, I was shocked by. Like, I thought I knew.
You said
I was
working.
I know, but I honestly, I had the answer already in my head. It's like, oh, it's Greg Maddux. Like, I don't need to listen to this answer because I know what it is. He's like, no, it's working. It's like, whoa. No denial? Like, he's right. It is. I guess I would wonder if he had the same opinion if he was still pitching.
Yeah.
I think he would probably have a different answer.
Because it is probably a way eventually for teams to then stop paying anybody because, hey, you're only giving us three innings.
Yep.
You're not a very starter. That is an interesting development, but great stuff from Greg Maddux. Once again, UNLV Strip View Pavilion, the first pitch dinner. Greg Maddux will be out there. It says keynote address. He says it's more of a Q&A.
Which is better for the fans.
Certainly better, so get out there and ask him questions.
Silent auction. It's pretty cool.
He did remind us of that.
Yeah.
2014 Hall of Famer Greg Maddux out there. Thursday night, 5:30 the reception. Dinner to follow. $100 for individuals. Not bad at all. Or you can get that $1,000 table. It includes 8 seats, and you'll be joined by 2 current Rebels. So get on out there Thursday night and do that. We thank you, Greg Maddux, for joining us. We'll continue Cofield & Company on this Tuesday.
Finley Toyota. They'll do anything to sell you a car. No Toyota problem is too tough, too large, or too small. Keep your Toyota running like a Toyota. From the Finley Toyota Studios, Cofield and Company is back.
Oh my God, we're back again. We We are back again. I was waiting for that line. Cofield and Company back here on this Tuesday. Some Backstreet Boys. They were prominently featured.
They were.
In a Super Bowl ad.
Yeah. I even felt nostalgic for them, which is odd.
It was, I'd seen the commercial early in the morning. It was on Instagram.
I hate that.
So it was not very new. But I actually thought the Chance the Rapper remix of Backstreet Boys was pretty good.
I want to go back to this Super Bowl commercials, though, dropping before the actual Super Bowl. First of all, we heard that the Super Bowl was down. Ratings were down. 10-year low. I can't help but think on some level, I know a lot of people that turn in for like the halftime show and they look forward to the commercials. When you're seeing the commercials, when the present has already been unwrapped, on some level, that's got to play into someone's discontent and not tuning in or the ratings not being what they were.
Possibly,
it's horrible.
Possibly, but at the same time, I don't know. There's a whole lot to get into. We'll unwrap some of the Super Bowl. Like it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You said Christmas, so I said unwrap. Yeah.
No, this was the best one, by the way. And
wrong.
Steven Zimmerman's mom, Lori. Hey, girl. We are going to go to a Backstreet Boys show. We decided.
Wow.
After both being obsessed with this ad.
I didn't tell this to anyone. I had an inner, dialogue in my head. I was like, would I go see? I mean, it would be fun. Like, I get party, get faded, go do the Backstreet Boys. But then I thought to myself, I was like, no, I couldn't just do it for the Backstreet Boys. But if you did, a boy band, Bonanza.
Oh, like NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, O-Town?
I don't think we're ever going to see NSYNC,
yeah,
right?
If NSYNC performed together, I would 1,000,000%
right,
go.
I think we would all go to that. I also don't think
with
NSYNC
JT
and Backstreet
only.
Boys would do that. I don't think those two would join forces.
Well,
no, Backstreet would if they offered.
So would the other four members of NSYNC.
JT's the
binder here. But no, I'm saying if it was, you mentioned O-Town. I don't remember. Let's use 98 Degrees because they're a little more legit. If it was if we did New Kids and we did 98 Degrees and
New
we did
Kids.
Backstreet Boys, yeah, that was my first concert.
If
the Joy
like
Center, 1989. Thank you very
like
much.
Like a Coachella of just boy
What's
bands.
Coachella?
Did you call it Coachella?
You know
what
it
is.
Coachella.
Coachella.
I'm going to start this.
Coachella?
Yeah, I have this guy, Billy. He's an investor. He's in New York. he was pitching some festivals. Let me get all the boy bands together. We're all going to meet at an island in the Bahamas, and we're going to have a boy band festival.
So you saw
I
that?
I like that.
That was so. I don't know what your takeaway from the Fire documentary, and this is obviously on Netflix, was, and we were not scheduled to get into this. But
I watched both.
What? What do you mean?
There's
both?
A Hulu one also. It came out at the same time.
I did not watch that.
Oh, the Hulu one had an interview with Billy.
Here's what I'm so blown away with, that it never ceases to amaze me at how easily convinced people are, seemingly intelligent people, by total hacks. People kept talking about this Billy guy. This Billy guy, that he had this charisma. Oh, well, he talked like he knew it, and we wanted to believe him. The key word is there. You wanted to. You wanted to be a moron. You looked the other way, and you got had by... This guy had the charisma of an old shoe. He had the charisma of a junkyard tire. If that dude were to walk... If I was managing a Chipotle, and they were like... Hey, Billy came in, and he was like, hey, man, I'm a go-getter. I'm a self-starter. You can count on me. I'd be like, no way, white boy. I don't trust you at all. I don't trust your smile. I don't trust your hair. I don't trust your look. I don't trust your eyes. Get out of my store.
Well, you didn't really see him much in the Netflix one.
No, but you heard people talk about him, and you saw clips of him, and you saw him speaking. He was a man baby. I don't know how people gave him millions of dollars. And I'm not talking about the people that put out for the concert itself. I'm talking about his financiers and his backers, presumably on Wall Street and in Manhattan and stuff. Like that one lady that they highlighted. What was she on to think that guy was going to get her returns?
I don't know. Everything was so baffling to me. But here, the thing was, there was no... I'm not going to cast aspersions on everyone that was there. There's nobody you really feel bad for other than the people on the island that got duped.
I felt bad for a couple of the media people that were like having their paychecks dangled in front of them, so they had to stick around. Like the one guy, the one voice of reason, he worked on the media side, and he was like, imagine this scenario. Imagine you have 3,000 people that pay thousands of dollars for this show. They arrive at the island, you put them on a bus, they get to their campsite, there is no campsite. There is no food, they're not hungry. He had the foresight and the understanding to see that this was all going to hell.
But he kept working.
And because they had half of his paycheck.
Right, but they're the ones that made the documentary.
No way.
Yeah.
Did not know that.
Yeah, they were making themselves look better.
Uh-huh.
That's why they made it.
That's why I need to see the Hulu.
Right.
I had no idea they were in on that.
Oh, yeah.
I did get that vibe, though. Like, as it was happening, it's like, where's the personal accountability from all you other morons?
Yeah, they made it.
Yeah.
This was their way of covering themselves.
That's what I did say that as I was watching it. This is a PSA. I said that to my wife.
Yeah, and then if you watch the other one, you kind of get another side of things, and there's actually an interview with Billy in there. But
I don't need to see an interview with that guy.
I do, because you hate him even more when you watch it.
Okay.
So, yes, it's worth it. There's just so much going on there. We got into a little bit with Justin Watkins last week, some of the legal ramifications that are there, if you want to go back and listen to that. But I usually in a scenario like this, you watch it, you're like, oh man, these people really got victimized, or this side really got victimized. And in this case, it's the people, you know, the lady that owned the restaurant in the Bahamas, and then all the day laborers that never got paid.
Yeah, no, the concert goers, no one felt bad for them.
No.
I remember when that happened, the weekend it happened, and I was following along on Twitter just laughing.
Of course.
Just, you idiots, you rich trust fund kids. I mean, some of them were spending $50K. Mind you, this wasn't even a good concert. It was, but not $50K good.
No, and I think they were duped a little bit by, you know, the fact that Kendall Jenner was part of it.
They thought
and
they
now,
were going to be there,
and now she's in the lawsuit. And and when good music's going to be there, and you know, Kendall's promoting it, well, clearly Kanye is going to perform.
Yeah, that's true.
So like, yes, you look at it and say it was not even that great of a show. They're just paying to kind of be a part of something. True, but I think the implications were there was going to be much, much bigger acts there that were just unannounced, and it was going to be this, you know, super cool thing to be a part of. Like, I get how it happens. I don't feel bad because, again, it's vast majority of them are rich kids. I'm sure there was a couple there that were maybe they just had nothing, but they, like, scrapped together whatever they could, worked extra shifts and overtime.
Let's find that. Let's find those people and do a documentary on them.
But then I feel bad for them.
What made you give your entire $10,000? And listen, I get it. I bought an English Bulldog 9 years ago when we had $1,500 to our name, my wife and I, and the dog costs like $700. So poor financial decisions are my forte. So I completely understand. I'm just blown away by the whole thing, man. I'm blown away from start to finish. The whole story, the way it happened, the fact that there's multiple documentaries, and the fact that these people entrusted Ja Rule. Like, was that not a red flag right off the bat?
What do you have against Ja
Rule? First of all, he was on the losing end of one of the worst rap beefs of all time between 50 Cent. Nobody cared about that beef. Nobody. And he lost. And 50 Cent isn't really doing that great right now either, but he's clearly off on the worst end of that. And you thought that he was going to be...
You could recover from rap beefs, though. Like, Meek Mill's done a pretty good job slaughtered.
You absolutely can, but this was like a rap beef from 15 years ago that he lost and no one talked about since. Then Ja Rule popped up again and he's like, I'm a concert promoter. That should have... You immediately should have known that this was trash. Immediately.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like...
This was like buying steaks from Trump. There's ties. There's all this stuff. He's just hawking stuff, trying to see what the next hot thing's going to catch on. And that was what Ja Rule was doing. He's like, well, I couldn't do a tequila company. I couldn't do this. I don't know what he's done.
I don't know what else either.
But I'm saying he probably did a bunch of other stuff that failed. And then he was like, you know what? Concert festivals are hot. I'm going to get into that.
Well,
my guy Billy, he promoted shows. We're going to start a concert festival.
Well, they were just trying to promote the app. It was all a promotional tool for the app that they were trying to design, which, again, I don't know how good the app was going to be or, you know, how it seemed like an interesting concept. I don't know how many people would actually use it to try to book artists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were trying to...
AKA Ja Rule.
They were going to try to match, like, hey,
this artist... This was Ja Rule wanting to get booked.
Yeah, I want this artist to play my kid's, you know, bar mitzvah.
Yeah.
How much is that going to cost? And connecting them together. Like, it was an interesting concept. Again, for people that have way too much money. But it was an interesting concept on that level. And then they were trying to promote this trying to push this festival to promote the app. The whole thing spiraled out of control. I highly recommend you watch it.
Mm-hmm.
We have talked about it with Justin. As I said, we'll probably talk about it more, but we also will get into this. And Steve's mentioned it. I'll mention it now. If you are listening and you're going to listen to Justin tomorrow on the show, and Justin will be here at 4:00, watch Abducted in Plain Sight tonight. Watch it tonight to be ready for tomorrow. My goodness. Steve's been telling me to watch it. I watched it so that we could discuss it tomorrow on the show.
Yeah.
I watched it on the plane. I went up to the Bay Area this weekend. And I turned it on right when I boarded the plane, and it's, you know, an hour and 7 minute, whatever it is, a super very short flight, so it's an hour and 20 minute documentary. So I was like, if I turn it on right away, and then it'll end right before we get off the plane, it'll be perfect timing. And I'm watching it. It was one of those, like, my jaw dropped, like, in the first 10 minutes of watching it, and I don't remember breathing for the entire flight.
I don't believe it.
Well, I watched the first 7 minutes until I did something. I think I pivoted to the Bundy tapes. But the first 7 minutes were super eerie.
Yeah,
like,
but that's
menacing.
So what I'll say about this documentary, and again, it's Abducted in Plain Sight on Netflix. We're going to talk about it tomorrow. That's why, for people, if you want to, hey, follow along the show, hey, watch it tonight so you can be more involved in the conversation tomorrow. But it's how I described it to people, and I went out and saw family, and I'm sure everybody was sick of it because it was one of these, you know, I was at an engagement party. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, some of the people, not everybody.
That was
and
your conversation,
like,
starter.
So everyone,
hey, have you seen
have
this?
Have you seen it? Just hoping somebody had watched it because I was so obsessed. And I'm sure people that were like overhearing the conversation are like, is he talking to them again about it?
You did, like, multiple, you hit up multiple groups?
Oh, 100%. I had nothing else.
That was your go-to?
I have nothing else.
Usually, you're a radio host and a sports writer, and you think your go-to is Abducted in Plain Sight.
Well, that's the other,
you're trying
thing.
To avoid talking.
Because
sports.
And somebody had mentioned something like, yeah. Oh, I guess you're just going to stand around and have everybody come up and ask you sports questions. I'm like, okay, what am I supposed to do? I don't know. So that was in my head. I didn't want to do that.
Well, I hate that. You hate that, I presume, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't hate it. Don't hate it, but it's what we do all day.
It's not even that. It's like, I feel because I'm so uncomfortable with everything, and I'm so, like, I never feel, I've talked about this before, I never feel anybody actually wants to talk to me. Like, ever. I've never been in a situation where I felt like somebody came up and was like, oh, I'm enjoying having this conversation.
That's not true. We were out at Tony Miller's birthday party a couple weeks ago. Faith came over and talked to you. She was genuinely excited to talk
to you. No, I felt like she felt responsibility.
Obligation,
yeah.
Before we left.
I feel like nobody has ever talked to me because they wanted to.
Well, we did come over as we were leaving. So.
It was some sort of obligation that people, like, that's just how I feel. That's how I've always felt. I don't think anybody ever actually wants to talk to me. So when people come up to me, like, at a party like that, and I'm just standing there, and they're like, oh, hey, I watched your interview with Dana White yesterday, or, hey, I listened to your radio show, and asked me about it. I'm like, so what, you're doing this so that you'll have something to relate to, and, like, you feel like you have to talk to me or for some reason, and this is what you're going to approach me with? Like, that's how I feel about everything. So if I have something to go to where I'm like, hey, look,
guess
I watched this documentary, did you?
Did.
And then it turned out really nobody had watched it, so I was just describing what it was. But how I was describing it is, you'll get 20 minutes in and say, that was the craziest story I've ever heard. Wow. Like, and now it's over. And then they're like, oh, no, but then this. And you're like, okay, there's something else. And then 10 minutes later, you're like, wow, what a crazy story.
So,
wait, another? Something else?
So it's the cinematic version of 2016, 2019.
Sure. Yeah, you can put it that way of, like, you think the story's over and, like, it can't get any crazier. And then another twist in the story. It's such a brilliant way of telling a story of, like, introducing some of the story and then, oh, but then there's more. And
knowing,
like,
that they're going to blow your
mind.
I got
to watch this now. It's crazy. But, yes, highly recommended. Go watch it. Right. Abducted in Plain Sight. We'll talk about it on the show tomorrow. And we'll continue. Cofield & Company.
You're 90 seconds away from more Cofield & Company right here on ESPN Las Vegas. Now it's time to find out what's trending on Cofield & Company.
All right, what's trending, I think, is the documentaries we were just talking about. They're definitely trending. They are big time out there. But what's also trending is the start of the Vegas Golden Knights game, which is moments away. You can listen to it. We're on our sister station starting right now, but I know we'll keep you updated as well if you just want to stay here. Nothing yet.
He's
Carlson.
Playing. He's playing, though.
Did we get the other one yet?
We have another one?
No.
We have another one?
I have
one?
It in the office.
Can we, you know, somebody just came in and said that they were done doing everything
can
they need
I, can
to
I
do.
Can I trust that you guys will not cuss if I just go real quick save it?
No, we can.
Uh-huh. No, we definitely can't.
Don't do that.
We should have told the guy who was just asking if there's anything else he can do.
I'm on it.
Yes, thank
you. Yeah, Jared, if you're listening throughout the hallways here, we could use that second drop, buddy.
It'll be good, just in case anything happens with the Golden Knights' first line tonight. But it has been a while since it has. Some struggles on the first line for the Golden Knights. Marchessault and Carlson have really dipped in their production.
Yeah.
I think it's been most noticeable defensively because last year they were a plus 85 for the season on that line, that first line, which is incredible. This year they are a minus 11. So not only has their production sank from about...
I'm sorry, what? I haven't heard that stat. Say that again.
They were plus 85 last year. They're minus 11 this year.
That is catastrophic.
Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah, and I mean, the change. After hearing that, this team is lucky to be where they are. I didn't know it was that bad.
Yeah.
I guess I'm holding on to the different spurts they had at different sections. Marceau was hot for a little bit. Carlson's been pretty cool throughout the pretty much the entirety, and Smith has been injured. But that is an abysmal shift.
It's an insane number to think about.
Yeah.
And a lot of that, listen, you can easily point and say, well, defensively, they haven't been what they have. But really, it's they're giving up a few more goals, but they're scoring a lot less goals. They went from 0.9 combined points per game last year. They were almost at a point per game each, and they're at 0.6 this year. So quite a significant fall off for that first line. And, you know, a lot of it is Riley Smith's been out the last couple of weeks, but the production was already down before that. And now Riley Smith is back, but he's not playing on that first line right now. They have plugged Valentin Zhikov into that first line role with Carlson and Marchessault to try to jumpstart something. And you've got Riley Smith now down on the third line with Brandon Peary and Cody Eakin. And I like that from the standpoint of they've struggled to find production on the third line all year. Now, certainly the first line needs a jump start, and they hope Zhikov can be that. He's been a guy that's been very productive at the minor league level, and they hope to get some of that same production at the NHL level. But what it really does is if they can get any kind of a jump start out of that line at all, the third line should be much more productive with those guys on it than it was, you know, with a combination of guys like Ryan Carpenter and Tomas Nosek and others throughout this season. You should get a lot more production out of a line that has both Riley Smith and Brandon Peary on it, along with Cody Eakin. And then if that line is productive and the first line is somewhat more productive, then all of a sudden you have four lines that actually you can roll through with, you know, expect a possibility of production out of all of those lines, which is what Gerard Gallant has wanted all along.
Yeah, and it's time for the line changes. I mean, Gallant has done a really fair job, and fair I mean as treating with the players with respect and being fair to them, and not going after that first line and trying his best to keep it intact and keeping in mind chemistry. You have now lost four in a row, and you're squaring off against the best team in the NHL, and you're going to need to get off the schneid. You're playing them at home. Tampa Bay beat you once already at home back in October. This is a team you beat twice last year. Obviously, the really exciting game in December with Shea Theodore scoring with 2.4 seconds left or whatever it is. But no, this is a huge game. This is about as big as a regular season game can get at this point in the season. There's only about 30 games left. This is the number one team, similar to the way they were in December when they came into town last year. But more so, Vegas needs to get off the schneid. As I said, four losses in a row. They've got to get back in the win column, Adam, especially because they're going to be facing not a tough division necessarily or a conference, but a cluttered one.
Oh. Marshy, Marshy, Marshy.
Look at that.
I did it myself.
Look at that.
Are you proud?
Impressive work. So
thank you.
Just in case that first line starts to show production tonight, we've got...
There you go.
Marshy, Marshy, Marshy.
And...
Carlson!
There you go. I think we still have to clean up the first one, but very good job on it.
Oh, she did it on the fly. We'll give her a pass.
No, it's very, good. Very good. Nothing yet. About 2.5 minutes into the game here in Tampa as the Golden Knights take on the best team in the NHL, at least according to the record, and probably in actuality as well, in the Tampa Bay Lightning. Now, the Golden Knights, we mentioned some troubling numbers already. The dip in production of the first line, the plus-minus dramatic shift from last year. Another number that's very, very troubling, 1-8 as an underdog this season. They are not playing well. When they're not expected to win, they don't win, and that's not good.
No, it's not.
So there is a long way to go, and, you know, you mentioned that division. The Calgary Flames are running away with things. They're way up, but the San Jose Sharks are actually... They're starting to play like a lot of people thought they would. They look really, really good right now. The Golden Knights are in a solid third place. They're, you know, I think 8 points up right now on the team behind them in the division. So they're somewhat comfortable in where they are, especially the fact that they have 16 home games left after this trip is over and only 10 games on the road after that Thursday game in Detroit. So they're in a favorable spot on the, in the schedule with the 26 games remaining after this trip. They also are a little bit favorable in terms of the division, in that they've got they've done very well against the division traditionally, and they've got a lot of division games coming up to close the season. but they really don't want to eliminate their margin for error. If they lose right. tonight and then lose Thursday, which, again, they're playing Detroit, but it's a road game and it'll be, you know, it's in a tough spot. If they were to lose both games, all of a sudden they're going to be right back in the bunch of teams behind them. They're not going to have that cushion anymore, which then you start to press a little bit. You start to get, you know, you start to feel the pressure, and that changes how you play a little bit. So some important games coming up, even though tonight is a game that they're not expected to win, but based on the odds board and based on the way they played the season, you want to try to at least get a point out of it and then see if you can get the two on Thursday and really build yourself up before you return home.
Yeah, listen, you know you can beat them. You beat them twice last year. You know, and this team isn't that different. Kucherov was great last year. Braden Point was really good last year. Their blue line has been great since they went to the Stanley Cup in, what was it, 13? This is a really dangerous team. They've only gotten better with Vasilevsky, but he was there last year. So if you're Vegas, you know you can beat this team. It's not like there's some, you know, just untouchable force that you just can't solve. They're not, you know, they're not the Patriots. They're not winning every single year. This is a team you can beat. Should you? I guess, you know, that the odds makers say no, but yeah, you lost four in a row. You're damn right you should. You do not, as you said, you don't want to face down five in a row and then the catastrophic failure that would come potentially in Detroit on, what is it, Thursday?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that six losses in a row. I mean, obviously, we're talking in hypotheticals and a lot in the future, but it would be bad. The good thing is, as you said, super away heavy to start the season. This is basically going to be, I mean, there's going to be a couple road trips here and there, but this is basically a home schedule the rest
of
the way.
It's mostly single games, yep. Either at San Jose, at at Anaheim. They still have a game coming up. They have two games at San Jose in the final month.
Phoenix one in there.
They've got at Colorado coming up. That's their next trip. It's a one-game trip. I think the only real trip they have is a Vancouver-Calgary-Dallas swing that's coming up, if I'm remembering my schedule correctly. So a lot of short trips, a lot of one-game trips, a lot of divisional opponents. So not a whole lot in terms of actual road trips the rest of the way. That is really good news for the Golden Knights, but they want to close this trip out on a high note so that they don't, you know, as we said, they still have that cushion going into the final stretch of 25 games.
It might be, you know, good news for the Knights, but is it good news for Marc-Andre Fleury? Because they rode him hard to, you know, obviously start this season and throughout it. And I've got to think, especially after Legacy over the weekend and the poor game that he played, we don't know what's happening with Subban.
Subban was back on the ice yesterday, and he's on the trip, which is a good sign. Like, they don't talk about injuries. They don't, you know, they never mention what's going on. Nobody even really still knows what's going on with Subban. But he is on the trip, and it's a good sign that he didn't stay home.
Yeah.
He was out there on the ice. It wasn't a full practice, but he at least participated. So he would not have come on the trip if he wasn't somewhat close.
Yeah.
So that's a good sign in that regard. He'll be back, and then Legassi will be going back down to Chicago, most likely. And then, you know, Nick Holden, we don't know.
Right.
We're still awaiting on when he'll be back, but he's still fighting his way back. Will Carrier, Lord knows. It's insane. It started off as not feeling well, so it was reported as an illness, but we were then told it wasn't an illness. It was that he wasn't feeling well that day, but he's hurt, so we're still trying to determine that one as well.
Speaking of, we don't have really clarity. Is Howell out for the whole season?
It's a very bizarre injury, an unusual injury for a hockey player, Ryan. That's what we've been told. My thought, just talking to people around the team, is that it would be surprising if he returned, but he's not ruled out.
Right.
Like, there's a chance. There's not a whole lot of history with this injury. And again, they're not specific about it, but there's not, you know, a lot of injuries that happen all the time. You know, okay, this is usually the time frame. There's not a whole lot of hockey injuries that are similar to what Howla had. So they really just didn't know. He had the surgery. They were waiting to see how long it would be until he was back to full strength. They just said there's not a whole lot of history of this injury to base this on, so we don't know. So there's some hope, but I don't think anybody around the team is banking on him being back.
Yeah.
So we'll continue to look. But again, that third line, if the third line right now, because Howla would be the, you know, a stalwart on that third line. He would have helped that third line in production amazingly well. But him not being there, now that they have, if they do continue this of Peary, Smith, and Eakin on the third line, that should be a productive line.
Oh.
That should be helpful to them if Zekov can stay up on that top line and contribute and help them start to produce as well. But we'll keep you updated on what is going on with the Golden Knights.
Tampa just went on the power play. 2-minute cross-checking Minor to Nate Schmidt. So minute 30 left in the opening power play for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Tampa Bay Lightning, number one overall in the NHL with their power play percentage. There's a silver lining there, though. VGK is second overall in penalty kill.
And they've
so
been,
a little matchup
the penalty
there.
Kill unit has been on fire lately for the Golden Knights. So we'll see if they can kill this off.
And nope.
Strength for strength, and Tampa Bay wins out here. Goal for Tampa.
What's point? It looks like point and edit it.
6.5 minutes into the first period, Braden Point scores for the Lightning. We'll keep you updated on this game as the show progresses. Cofield and company will hear from Steve Cofield next hour from up in Boise on this Tuesday.
The crew over at Finley Toyota speak Spanish, Thai, and even Persian. In fact, they speak 14 different languages. Come in and talk the universal language of big savings today. It's Cofield and Company's Eye on Sports Gambling, presented by Swagger Men's Grooming.
I'm going to kill your bookmaker. I'm going to rip his throat out. I will step on his throat until the man chokes. Let me tell you how. Winners, 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 winners. Free, 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 free.
Wrapping up the 4 o'clock hour here at Cofield and Company. Big 5 o'clock hour ahead. Of course, the Big 5, as always, got a lot of great stories to get into, including if you are out there and you follow me on Twitter and you are up very late at night, you know the story I'm most obsessed with right now. We'll get into that a little bit in the 5 o'clock hour. Some crazy and wacky stories as well, as always, part of the Big 5. And Steve Cofield will join us from Boise to wrap up the hour. That will be fascinating and entertaining, I'm sure. We'll hear how the weather is up in Boise and how UNLV is preparing for their game after making the trip up there today. Mike Petralia was at the Patriots celebration today. The once again parade.
Gronk Fest 2019.
Gronk Fest, which is a
one more. I got only 69 touchdowns.
He's got 6 Super Bowls. Probably hoping. I don't think he's with them for all 6. But
you hear this said a lot. Like living your best life. Like I know a lot of people feel a lot of different ways about Rob Gronkowski. But one thing that cannot be denied: this dude is out here living his absolute best life. Maybe not when he's on the field taking shots and not being able to walk, you know, upright, but he is. I saw this video today doing like a Stone Cold Steve Austin, like, you know, 6-foot pour from the heavens while simultaneously groping his dime of a girlfriend.
Is it Emil Kostek?
Yeah, Emil Kostek is Sports Illustrated supermodel, cover model, girlfriend, whatever.
Whatever
he's
she
living,
is.
Yeah, he's living the life.
Isn't she blonde though?
Yeah, Adam.
Sorry, Chrissy.
What's wrong with blondes?
He does this.
Nothing,
it's just,
nothing.
It's like if it's a 10,
nothing,
and if she's a 10, right, she's like an 8.5 or an 8 in Adam's eyes.
Oh, so I must be like a 3.
Brunette, yeah. You jump up. You get 2 extra points for being brunette, yes. That's how it works.
What about if I'm a natural brunette?
That it's a point instead of 2.
Yeah, it's like, it's half.
All right,
actually,
so
you
like
get even
4.
More off. Why would anybody go from brunette to blonde? Doesn't make any sense.
We could debate this all day.
It just doesn't make
blondes
sense.
Blondes have more fun, sweetie.
I feel like this is tailor-made for the Big 5.
Perfect. We will get into not that. Maybe we'll maybe spiral into that conversation again. We'll find out. But we will continue with a huge 5 o'clock hour coming up next.
Swagger Men's Grooming. A full-service shop with haircuts, beard trims, face shaves, hair color, and waxing for men. It's Swagger Men's Grooming. Open 7 days a week at Coronado Center Drive and Eastern.